This is my journey, inspired one story at a time. A library of leaders was created. It began as a journey to learn. As time went on, it began to grow. All it needed was a platform, and this podcast was created to listen, to inspire, to share. I am a storyteller, and this is my journey. Welcome to another episode of Profiles in Leadership. I'm your host, Steve Anderson, and today our guest is Walter Bond. Walter is a motivational speaker, a leadership coach, an author, an ex-NBA player. He gives over 100 keynote speeches a year. He works with Jersey Mike's, Blue Cross Blue Shield, the Dwyer Group, Hilton, the UPS store, just to name a few of his clients. He speaks all over the world and brings an infectious energy to everything he does. So buckle up your seatbelt for this one, folks. This interview, his passion shines through, and his insights to leadership and training really hit the mark. So let's dive in and try and absorb all we can. Walter, welcome to the program. It's really great to have you today.
Thank you, Steve. I'm ready to have a good time with you, me and you.
That's great. So just give us kind of the cliff note version of your time growing up. I believe it was in Colorado and then playing in the NBA.
Well, yeah, I played college ball at the University of Minnesota, Chicago native, grew up on the South Side, and I got a chance to play for the Dallas Mavericks, Utah Jazz, and Detroit Pistons, and also played in Europe. Got a chance to see the world, played over in Italy, Greece, Germany, played in Venezuela, played in Canada a little bit. So basketball just took me on about a 20-year journey, you know, where I got to meet my wife and just grow up and turn from a boy into a man. And to me, my life didn't really begin for real until after my basketball career was over, to be honest with you. But it was a great run, a great experience, and learned a lot.
Well, so how does, you know, a lot of young boys dream of being a professional athlete and playing in the NBA or Major League Baseball or the NFL or whatever, but very, very few ever get there. So how did you get there? Were you just have that great natural talent, or did you work for it hard? How did it come about?
You know, Steve, there's a whole formula. And, you know, to your point, it's hard. I mean, for example, the NBA, there's only 450 guys that play in the NBA every year. So you literally have to be one of the top 450 basketball players in the world. You know, baseball and football has slightly bigger numbers because they carry bigger rosters. But, you know, just say the NFL, I mean, you multiply, you know, 53 players by, you know, 32 teams, you know, you talk about 1,500 guys. So basically, it's tough, right? And so how do you make it? One, you got to have talent. You got to have ability. You know, I'm 6'5". And when my kids' friends meet me and they, oh, your dad's so tall. I'm like, not really. You know, I'm shorter than average, you know, for an NBA guy. The average height in the NBA is 6'8". So a lot of young kids, I mean, the talent's got to be there. And probably the biggest thing that breaks my heart, and I used to be a speaker that went around to high schools and middle schools, and it breaks my heart when kids have this dream of playing pro ball, but they don't have the physical attributes to go along with it. And there's a lot of things you can be successful with. It doesn't have to be baseball, basketball, or football. You know, right now, esports is big, and the whole gaming world is increasing. And so I think the most important thing when you're young is to discover what you're really good at. And I just happen to be really good at sports. My dilemma, Steve, was, is it going to be baseball, basketball, or football? So that was more my dilemma than really having some natural talent.
Wow. And so you sound like you played all three sports then. That doesn't happen too much with youth these days. It seems like they're forced into specialization pretty early.
Well, Steven, you know, you're teeing me up, man, because this is a serious issue. Obviously, I believe in cross-training. And I'll give you an example. When I played for the Mavericks, I was player of the game. And the announcer asked me right there in real time, Walter Bond, your left hand is amazing. How did you develop your left hand? And I was stumped by the question. I didn't even know how to answer it. And I went home thinking about it, like, why is my left hand so advanced? Then I started thinking about it. It had to be baseball. You know, I played baseball. I was named after my uncle who played Major League Baseball. So I grew up in a baseball family. When you play baseball family, you're going to be ambidextrous. You use your left hand and your right hand. And I was a back catcher, right? So I'm involved in every play when you catch from behind the plate. And when you get older, you know, I don't know if any of my high school teammates hit 90, but I guarantee you they were throwing the high 80s and you got to scoop it out the dirt. And so I give credit to my left hand in basketball to being a baseball player. So you can make the argument, if I didn't play baseball and develop my left hand as a shorter guy, I might not have even made it to the NBA. So any parents listening, cross train, soccer is all good. Akeem Olajuwon, you know, one of the best big men ever, he credits playing soccer as a kid to being an effective basketball player. It breaks my heart when these coaches put pressure on parents and kids to choose young, like 8, 9, 10 years old. That is so selfish. Now, I will say there is a time to choose, but I think it's like 14, 15, maybe 16. It's not when you're 8, 9, 10. I think it's about having fun, enjoying different sports, and allowing the cross-training, you know, to influence you. And I'll give you one more example. You know, I'm a big football fan. I never forget hearing a football coach named Jerry Keel at the University of Minnesota. He was saying that he loved to recruit defensive backs who played high school basketball because he felt like they had fluid hips. He felt like they could change directions, and he wouldn't recruit you to play football for him as a defensive back unless you played high school basketball. And so a lot of times parents and some of these youth coaches, they don't understand that all of these sports kind of influence each other. You can really benefit from them.
Yeah, that's really a great point. Share with us a little bit in doing research for this. I read a story that I think when you were playing for Minnesota that you actually had a broken foot injury and kind of what did you learn from that experience and how did that set you back? But yet you learned something from that, I would assume.
Well, the first thing I learned is that the trainer became my best friend. And I know that we have a lot of physical therapists on the line today. Literally, I broke my foot twice, my senior year, broke it twice. And it was emotional. And so my physical therapist and trainer had to really keep me motivated, inspired, had to deal with my emotions along with my foot. But my senior year, after never starting in college, I broke my foot twice. And so, you know, when you're trying to play pro ball, that's the worst time in your life to get hurt. And I didn't break my foot once. I broke it twice. In fact, I still have a screw on my foot to this day. But what I learned was resilience. You know, what I learned is just to have the right people around you. And in fact, I almost quit on my MBA dreams. I was going to be a hospital administrator. I had a very good job offer coming out of college. It was a $75,000 job in 1991. But it was my dad. You know, my dad was also my high school principal. And he knew that I'd had these injuries. He knew I was a little frustrated because I didn't start. He just asked me a question. He said, "Do you believe you're good enough to play in the NBA?" He didn't ask me if I had a chance or if I had a shot. He asked me, was I good enough? And that was the perfect question because the prospects of me playing in the NBA were dim because I didn't start. I only have 7 points a game. But that wasn't his question, did I have a chance? His question was, do I believe I was good enough? And the answer was yes. And he said, "Well, go for it, son." "But Dad, I never started in college." But Dad, I got a screw on my foot." And, you know, I motivate people now, Stephen. And most people talk themselves out of things instead of talking themselves into things. And my father wouldn't let me talk myself out of my dream. It wasn't his dream. It was my dream. And again, his brother, my uncle, played Major League Baseball. So, you know, as I got older, he was like, "Dude, your career was very similar to your uncle's. And pro ball is tough. So you're going to have injuries. You're going to have, you know, setbacks. You're going to have to deal with adversity. But that's life. You know, it's not just sports. That's life. I mean, we're coming out of a pandemic. That was adversity. People get fired and lose jobs and get divorced. And, you know, kids have health issues and drug issues. Man, that's life. And so to me, it really taught me to fight through adversity and not to give up so easily and not to quit so easily. I got a chance to make it to the NBA on my father's faith, to be honest with you. But think about all the benefits that my life has been able to appreciate just by becoming an NBA ball player. Now I'm a Hall of Fame motivational speaker, a best-selling author. When I tell business people, "Yeah, I played in NBA," there's a level of respect that goes with it because people understand, to your point earlier, how hard it is and all the work that it takes and all the focus and just all of the energy it really is required to become one of the best basketball players in the world. So overcoming adversity probably is the biggest lesson that I learned. We talked about it earlier. You got to be talented. No compensation for that. But you got to bust your butt. You have to work harder than you've ever worked in your life. Because if you let someone outwork you, I mean, you can take a guy less talented, but if I outwork you, I'm gonna beat you in the end, right? But also understood, learned that success is a process. It doesn't happen overnight. It does not happen overnight. It's a process.
I'm just intrigued. I mean, how do you have the audacity to be in a position where you didn't start in college, yet you made the NBA? I mean, you know, usually the NBA is made up of the best player on every on college teams, not somebody who didn't start. That's an incredible story. How do you account for that?
Well, I can give you the logical answer. I can give you the true answer. The true answer is being a motivational speaker, Stephen, is my purpose. And I think that God gave me a chance to go through some stuff so that I can relate to people, right? I flunked out of my first high school. We can talk about that later. And my parents were teachers. And honestly, it was the first time I failed. I went to one of these top academic schools, and Michelle Obama went there, and, you know, Jesse Jackson kids went there. And these were the smartest kids in Chicago. And I got my lunch handed to me academically. And I ended up having to transfer and leave all my friends. And my dad transferred me to his high school. And I tell you what, man, in that car going from the south side of Chicago to the west side of Chicago was a coaching session every morning. And sometimes I was talking to my dad in this coaching session, but sometimes I was talking to my high school principal. And those 2 years I spent at my father's high school really built my confidence academically. And it really changed my whole mindset. Because to be honest, when you're the youngest in the family, and you have success in your family. You know, my dad's in the Hall of Fame at his college. My uncle played Major League Baseball. My big sister won 2 national championships playing at USC with a girl named Cheryl Miller. And here I am, the youngest, and everyone's telling me I'm the best athlete in the family. But my parents were teachers, and they were like, look, man, it's about being a student athlete. And I only heard one part of that equation. I heard the athletic part, but I didn't hear the student part. And it took me a little while through some one-on-one coaching to kind of get the picture that that this family produces student athletes, with students athlete being the primary.
So you've mentioned so far in our discussion here about your dad being a huge influence on your mindset and your thinking going forward. And did you have other coaches or mentors who really made a big difference in your life?
You know, Stephen, one thing that I share with my audiences all over the world is a simple recipe. If you want to reach your potential. Now, a lot of people don't even think that way. A lot of people are just comfortable being average, to be honest with you. You know, the average company, 60% of their employees are average. You go to the average high school, 60% of their students are C students, right? And a lot of people are content with average. And so I want to make a statement right now, and I want every business person to hear me. I want every physical therapist to hear me. I want every mom, every dad to hear me. The only way you can reach your potential is that you got to have a coach. I mean, think about it. You got to have a coach if you want to reach your potential. Because when I think about sports, the amount of work and effort that it took to become an NBA ball player, I didn't have it in me by myself to push myself that hard. And I remember being in practice throwing up, right? I remember going in the weight rooms like, dude, I can't walk. Like my arms are cramping up. And that's the kind of thing you can't do on your own, right? And so if you think about a personal trainer, you should have a love hate with your trainer. Right. You should love the results. But while you're going through your workouts, man, you should be like, man, I hate this dude. I hate this chick. Because they're pushing you, yeah, you know, to beyond your own limitations. And so you got to have a coach. But here's what real success is. A great coach has a system or a process. You think about Phil Jackson and the Chicago Bulls. He had the triangle offense. Right. That was his system. Right. You talk about Pete Carroll right there in Seattle. Why does he win so consistently? He has a system. And what he does, he recruits and drafts and puts people into a system. I've seen Pete Carroll take guys who were basketball players and put them on the offensive line. Right. And so that's a coach who has confidence in his system. And so when you don't have a system as a coach, what do? You rely on talent. and you hope you draft the next superstar to bail you out. Or you hope you make a blockbuster trade for someone to bail you out. A great coach has a system. Nick Saban has a system. My college basketball coach had a player development system, and it was intense. And if you plugged into his player development system, you would reach your potential in college. I had seven teammates playing the NBA. So you got to have a coach. You got to have some kind of system, process, or methodology, and you got to understand the transformation takes time. If you understand that recipe, anybody on this podcast today, write those three things down. That's the recipe for the peak performance cake. You got to have a coach. A great coach has a system, and you got to understand the transformation takes time. That's the formula.
That's awesome. Now, you played against some amazing, great NBA players, and what was your mindset when you go against a guy like, I believe you played against Michael Jackson?
Michael Jordan.
I'm sorry, Michael Jackson. How did I say that? That was a total screw up. But yes, Michael Jordan.
That's okay.
I'm sorry.
You must have listened to some Michael Jackson music.
That's it, yeah.
No, I got a chance to play against Michael Jordan. Obviously, he's the best in the world, best of all time. I'm not going to argue with you if you say LeBron. I'm not. And for one reason, LeBron is the only player that I've ever seen in my lifetime who's in the conversation of being the greatest of all time and did not play for a legendary coach. You almost always see a legendary coach coach the legendary player. So with that regard, I'm going to give LeBron a lot of credit because he never played for a legendary coach. But to answer your question, how do you prepare mentally to play in NBA? It's easy because you believe you're just as good. I mean, you know, people ask me the question all the time because I have videos where I even scored on Michael Jordan a couple times. And people are like, man, what was that like? I said, what do you mean? Like, what was that like to play against Michael Jordan? Like, I'm trying to kick his butt. It's no different than being in the backyard or at the park competing against guys wearing shirts and skins. Yeah, Michael Jordan is good. Yeah, he's great. But you know what? I'm going out here and I'm going to compete, right? And so a lot of people can't get their head around that. But here's the truth. Another reason people reach their potential is confidence. You know, I see so many people, imagine a physical therapist who opens up a business and say, you know what, I just want to be an average physical therapist, right? Steven, I believe you had a different mentality. I believe you opened up your business and said, look, I just don't want to be an average physical therapist. I want to create a freaking, what word am I looking for? I want to create a conglomerate, right?
Yeah.
I want to create a dynasty. And it's all mentality. You know, when I was a little kid, you know, I wanted to play pro ball as 8, 9 years old. And I believed I was going to make it. My dilemma, as I said earlier, is it going to be baseball? Is it going to be basketball? Is it going to be football? My dilemma was not if. My own dilemma was like, which sport am I going to choose to play in the NBA? So the ultimate level of confidence is so important to being successful. So you might say, well, Walter, I'm not confident. I'm not naturally confident. Let me tell you something. If you're operating in your gift and you work hard, you're going to have confidence. And so the first thing I tell people when I coach them in our coaching program, especially young people, before you decide a career, you must first discover your gift. How many kids do we know, they go to college, have no clue what they want to do, and then end up switching their major 3, 4, 5 times, right? To me, before you decide a career, you must first discover your gift. At a young age, Stephen, I was bigger, stronger, faster. I had a higher IQ than most kids in my neighborhood, right? Then I got to college and high school. It was just a natural thing. It was just a gift from God. Now, then I had to work on it and develop it, but that applies to anything. Some people are great in math, right? Some people are just great visionaries, come up with great ideas. Some people are great at engineering, and some people are great with technology. My son is just naturally amazing with technology. He was like that when he was a little boy. Now, all of a sudden, he's 26. What is he in? Bitcoin. What does he want to do? Code, right?
Yeah.
It was a natural gift that he just matriculated to. And so to sum it all up, if you understand your gifting, and if you're really willing to work hard with your gifting, you're going to be confident because not many people can do what you do in this area. Don't give me a computer and try and fix it, right?
Yeah.
You give it to my son. But if you want something from me, you give me a microphone and some people who need motivation. That is my gift.
Yeah, that's awesome. Besides yourself, who would you say is the toughest competitor you ever went up against?
Wow. I mean, Reggie Miller comes to mind. I mean, the NBA was full of them. John Stockton, my teammate. Oh, my God. You know, I categorize athletes in two different buckets, and I do a lot of thinking. Some athletes were very competitive, and some athletes were entertainers. When I think about competitors, that is Michael Jordan. That's Kobe Bryant. I mean, that is that's Brett Favre, right? That's Tiger Woods. Tiger Woods has no interest in entertaining. He competes. But there's another type of athlete that was an entertainer. I think about Deion Sanders, right? I think about Charles Barkley. You know, I think about, I'm drawing a blank on the other. Muhammad Ali, my God, he was not just a competitor. He was also an entertainer. So to me, the greatest of all time have both. They're incredibly competitive, but they also understand that they entertain. And I think Magic Johnson, right? So my favorite athletes of all time are Muhammad Ali, Magic Johnson, because I think they had both. These men were incredibly competitive, but they also were very entertaining. And to me, for example, if Charles Barkley, who was still entertaining, if he was a little bit more competitive, I think that could have been the difference in him winning a championship, if that makes sense. But just because Pat Ewing, very competitive. John Stockton, very competitive, right? Karl Malone was a little bit more of an entertainer to me than maybe a competitor. But I think there's two buckets you fall in. And I don't, you know, obviously, if you want to win a championship, you know, you want a competitor. But sometimes the fans just love an entertainer. Right? Someone who's going to put on a show. And for me, I'm more of an entertainer. And that's why when my career was over and I gravitated into the speaking business, it was a natural fit. And I used to broadcast for the Timberwolves. And Steven, I didn't like it. And people were like, wow, you didn't like broadcasting? I hated it. Why? Because I felt like a spectator, right? I felt like I was spectating when I'd much rather be a participant entertaining than being a spectator.
Yeah, that's a great perspective. Talking about being a speaker, I mean, you do over 100 keynote speeches a year. Holy cow, you're on the road. You're like a musician heading to different cities. How do you make that work, and how do you manage all that?
You know, it's been great. You know, when my career was over, my college basketball coach at your senior banquet, they let all the seniors speak, and you get 15 minutes. So allegedly, rumor has it that I gave the greatest 15-minute speech in the history of Minnesota basketball. And so I can't even remember what I said. And, you know, because it's just a natural gift, to be honest with you. My oldest brother is a preacher. My dad was a very good public speaker. It's really just a family gift. And he said, son, you should be a motivational speaker. And I'm like, what are you talking about? I'm trying to play it to the NBA. Like, it was just like a bizarre comment to me. And 10 years later, when I was broadcasting for the Timberwolves, I was like, I do not like this. And my wife and I sat down, had a long conversation. She was doing pharmaceutical sales. And I was like, I remember my coach said I should be a motivational speaker. Long story short, Stephen, we launched within 3 years, man. We had real traction. Now I'm a Hall of Fame speaker. And I'm a Hall of Fame speaker now, and I do about 100 events a year. My biggest audience has been 25,000. I've done stuff for Microsoft. I've done stuff in franchise systems. I mean, I sit on corporate boards. It's been incredible. And I said it earlier, basketball really was not my purpose. I think God used basketball to prepare me for my purpose. And so I understand that success is a process. I understand that it's a journey. I understand how to be a good teammate. I know the difference between a good coach and a bad coach, right? I know what greatness feels like, but I also sat on benches, right? And I know what it feels like to lose confidence, right? I know what it feels like to not feel important. So I'm really in a position where I can really relate to anyone at any company of any size. I routinely sit down and coach CEOs, but I can also talk to the guy with the GED missing a cup of tea, right? It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter to me. Like, literally, I'm in the people business, and your salary or what position you have in a company doesn't matter to me. Everyone's important. And when you're in the people business, we're the most valuable resource on this earth. People are. And it breaks my heart when people, you know, rescue dogs and they go and trying to rescue whales and sharks, but then they'll walk right by a person and not give the same type of care. And I'm like, look, I love dogs, you know, and I love wildlife. I love animals. In fact, my book Swim was about a shark. But how do you not have that same love and compassion for a human being? Yeah. And that's just the business I'm in, maybe. I'm in the people business. And so I don't matter if you're struggling. I don't matter if you're on drugs. My attitude is give them to me. Let me coach you. Give them to me. I don't care. Give them to me.
That's great. So what's scarier or tougher, going against a great NBA team as a player or speaking in front of 25,000 people?
That's a great question. Great question. I need to think about that a little bit. What's scarier? Neither one of them scare me. What comes easier to me would probably be speaking to 25,000, right? I've done it once. And as soon as I was done, I told my wife, oh, I want to do this again. Because there's a little bit of a sound delay, you know, without getting too technical. When you speak in front of 25,000, it's a massive audio system. And it literally was like a 3-second delay. So when you cracked a joke, you had to have confidence in your joke, right? You literally had to say something and wait for the audience to respond. And I'm pretty, it was like almost working through a translator. You know, I've done international programs where you have to kind of wait for the translator. It was very similar to that. But hey, 25,000, bring it on. I can't wait to be able to do it again. But to me, that came easier. See, I have a big body, right? So for me, Stephen, to make it to the NBA, you ask my wife, my offseason was full-time just getting my weight down to like 213, 215. That was a full-time job in itself. I always had the skill. I always had the ability, but really my body is built more like a football player. If someone would have grabbed me out of high school and said, look, we need a 300-pound left tackle, I'd have been like, coach, give me 90 days. You got it. But in fact, if Steve Carroll called me right now that he needed a 300-pound left tackle, I'm ready to go today.
Right? Well, we do need some help on the O-line. So maybe there's a shot there. So
If I wasn't 52 years old, right, I'll take you up on it. But, you know, I chose basketball, right? Yeah. I chose basketball, and it worked.
So let's discuss your book a little bit. It's called, I know you've written several books, but the most recent one is called Shark Mindset. So tell me a little bit about where the title comes from and what you're trying to get across in that book.
Yeah, well, the book is called Swim. And it's about the shark mindset.
Okay.
And what happened, I was fishing one day, and I caught this ugly fish. And the captain comes over. I said, man, can we eat it or not? That's all I care about, really. Can I eat it or not? He goes, no, but watch this. He takes the fish and he sticks it on top of the boat. And this fish defied gravity. From the top of his head, it basically was stuck to the boat for like 5 minutes. And it was squirming around. I mean, a strong suction. And so I'm trying to figure out this weak fish is in this big ocean. I'm a Midwest guy, and I grew up around lakes. And I'm trying to think, like, man, this little weak fish, how's it making an ocean? And let's get it back in the water. So as he throws the fish back in the water, he goes, Walter, a sucker fish flails in the ocean waiting for a shark to come by. And when a shark comes by, it connects to the shark, and that's how they make it. And I was like, man, that's fascinating. What did you say? Let's say that again. He said, yeah, that suction is their only resource, really. And when they connect to a shark, they work in tandem. The shark needs a suckerfish, and the suckerfish needs the shark. And I went home and did research because initially on that boat, I was like, man, that's like a coaching metaphor, right? That's like a mentoring metaphor. That is like incredible. And then I began to realize that no matter how big a shark gets, they're vulnerable to parasites. So the suckerfish benefits from the relationship because they get to eat the scraps every time a shark makes a kill. And sharks are so big and strong, these suckerfish get to conserve energy. And basically, it's like riding Uber for free, right? And they go all over the ocean with the shark. And they got one job, though. Sharks are very vulnerable to parasites. In the ocean, if a parasite gets into the lungs, the gills, or into the nostrils, it can attack a shark's brain. So think about that metaphor. No matter how big a CEO gets, they still need their employees, right? Right now, we live in a world where a lot of companies are struggling to find labor. And I've had people tell me in our coaching sessions, like, Walter, I could be making more money, but I can't find the right people. I can't get enough people. I need one more crew. I can't find people. I need people. I need the right people. And so no matter how successful you get, no matter how wonderful you are, I mean, Steve Jobs needed a whole lot of people to execute Apple and the whole iPhone phenomena. Elon Musk, we always talk about him, but hey, how many people is he really dependent on? Bill Gates, I mean, we always give that one person the credit, and I call them the great white shark. But you better believe a lot of these companies like Walmart, I mean, they have thousands and thousands and thousands of employees that are important. And so I call them the sucker fish, right? And so what I really teach my leaders, like, look, man, they need you, but you need them. And don't you dare walk around here arrogant, like you don't need each other. And for me, being a former NBA ball player, Stephen, let me make this clear. Because we have a teamwork methodology called I-Team, and people are blown away by it, because when I left the NBA, you didn't even say the word leadership, right? We're all grown men with wives and kids. I don't need you to be my leader. I'm married, right? With kids, right? But I need you to be a good teammate. And so after 8 years of pro basketball, you know, you need a little bit of leadership in college because you're a freshman and you need a senior to kind of help you. But once you make it to the NBA, you're a grown man, you know, and basically I don't need a leader. I need a teammate. And so when I got into the business world, and I began going to the bookstore and going to conferences, everything, Stephen, almost everything was leadership. And it baffled me. I was like, leadership, where's the teamwork stuff? Because that's what it's like. And by the way, what is the leader's job? To build a team. So after a while, I saw this huge void in teamwork content and teamwork methodology. Remember earlier, I said, look, you got to have a coach. And a great coach has a system, and transformation takes time. And I began to get calls from the Gallup poll, and they were like, hey, do you want to use our stuff? Because there's a serious issue in turnover and apathy and alignment. And I was like, it's simple. The coach doesn't have his team together, right?
Yeah.
And in sports, when the team is bad, they fire the coach. They don't fire all the players. They fire the coach. And so what I realized, Stephen, which is really serious, a lot of these business leaders are frustrated. They are trying to improve their culture. And they want to blame everybody else, right? They want to blame, you know, I can't find good help in these millennials and these Gen Xs and these Gen Zs. Here's the problem. We need to fire the coach because you don't know how to build a team. You take a guy like Phil Jackson. He was able to coach Michael Jordan, who's anal, and incredibly focused, right? You got Scottie Pippen, who kind of was lackadaisical country, you know, probably lacked a little confidence from time to time. And then you got Dennis Rodman, right? The guy run around yeah. with dresses on and his whole body's tatted up. Phil Jackson was a great coach. Here's why. He knew how to connect with Dennis Rodman. Right. He knew how to speak Dennis Rodman's language. He knew how to connect with Scottie Pippen. But he also knew how to connect with Michael Jordan. And to me, any leaders out here, that's what team is all about. Are you a true coach? And do you know how to develop people? And that's what we do with our I-Team methodology. We help leaders with a blueprint on how to build, how to fix, and how to repair any team at any moment. And we start from the foundation, right? Because teams will beat you with culture. Right now, you look at football. Nick Saban has a culture. Okay, so when that freshman comes in, he just falls into the culture. Dabo Sweeney has a culture, right? Phil Jackson, any great coach in sports has a culture. But I found the same thing true in business. Jersey Mike Subs is one of our clients. They have an amazing culture. Chick-fil-A has an amazing culture. I lived in Minneapolis for 25 years. Target has a culture. Medtronic has a culture. So I don't care if it's sports. I don't care if it's business. I don't care if it's your family. You got to have a strong culture, and you got to focus on the culture. But if I'm a leader, and if I don't understand that, I'm just grabbing random people, and we're working hard, but it's not working. The whole pro sports industry, everybody plays hard, right? The Cleveland Browns played hard when they were 3-36 under Hugh Jackson, okay? There's a lot of companies right now who play hard, who work hard, but they're toxic and they're frustrated. And so that's not enough. You have to understand as a leader how to build a culture so that your people have great communication skills, open and honest communication, okay? You have to have a culture where there's accountability. I'm not pointing the finger at anybody. I'm focused on what can I do to make us win, okay? You got to have a team with common goals. Where are we going, coach? What's the vision? You know, you think about your kids, Steven. When you go out of town, your kids hop in the car and they say, "Mommy, are we there yet? Daddy, are we there yet?" Nobody hops in the car and go nowhere. Yeah. So if I'm a business leader who does not have a vision, who does not continually articulate that vision to my teammates, they're literally coming to work every day and they don't know where the hell we're going. And then you wonder why they quit. You wonder why they don't care. You wonder why they have apathy. You wonder why it's toxic. You wonder why people are frustrated because you got people getting in the car with you and we're not going anywhere.
Yeah.
And yeah. You think it's enough just to pay them every 2 weeks. That's not enough.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more that communication piece is so important and talking to different people in different languages in different ways, because, you know, it's going to resonate with them differently than it resonates with others. I think that's a huge skill and something we should all work on. But how do you, so I understand that you need a plan and you need a culture and you need a vision, but how do you build a successful team in your business? Are you looking for the right people, or do you just feel like, you know, you get a good people in there and then you can teach them how to be a good team?
Well, let me start this way, Stephen. A lot of business leaders make mistakes because they want everyone to be like them, right? And they brag about it. Like, "Oh, I like this guy. He gets it. You know, he's a lot like me." Well, you know, think about if you went to hear an orchestra and all you had on the orchestra were drums, or all you had were violins, or you had a whole orchestra and everybody just making a different sound, but nobody's following the sheet music. That would be an awful experience, right? Correct. And so it's not enough just to go grab people. To me, it's up to the coach to have the system, to have the process and figure out how many violins do I need, right? How many bass guitars do I need? How many drummers do I need? And what music are we going to play? That's the conductor's job, right? And the conductor selects the music and the conductor selects the orchestra. And when something's out of tune, he or she knows how to fix it. So that's my analogy. If you go to a football game and there's a marching band, right? They have a bunch of different instruments, but they all are making a different noise, but together it's music. And the band director is perched up on a tall ladder and they're looking at formations and they're listening to the music and they know exactly how to fix it. If I'm a business leader, if I don't have a process, I just got a bunch of people at work making noise. Or I don't even know what kind of people I need on my team. And I'll give you another example. You know, in sports, you know, people say, "Well, I love Tom Brady. I wish I had a locker room full of them. I love Russell Wilson. I wish I had a locker room full of them." No, you don't. You only need one Russell Wilson. You only need one Tom Brady, but who's going to block for him? Right? Who's going to play middle linebacker, right? And so when you build a team, you need collective pieces that complement each other. And if you don't understand how to build pieces that complement each other, here's what's going to happen. They're going to start competing with each other. And so with our IT methodology, we created a term called work expressions. And in fact, we have a whole assessment that goes with it. Because think about it. In basketball, you play your game. And when a game is over, if you don't get to play your game, you kind of a little withdrawn, right? "Hey, man, aren't you happy we won?" "Yeah, I'm happy we won, but I didn't get to play my game. I didn't contribute. I didn't get to do my thing," right? It's like Steph Curry missing a whole bunch of shots. You know, even if they won, he's going to be happy, but he's going to be in his locker with his head down and say, "Man, I missed too many shots. I can't keep missing these shots for us to win because my team needs me to make these shots." And so in basketball, it's very specific. You know exactly what you need to do to make your team win. In our experience in 20 years in corporate America, teaching and training people, the average employee doesn't even know what their responsibility really is, or they don't even know how important it is. And so they just come into work and they don't even realize they're important. Let me give you one example, a business example. McDonald's, right? We all know that McDonald's is the franchise Hall of Fame guru. Nobody's franchised like McDonald's. But let me tell you what they did that was brilliant. And I want every business leader to hear me. And this is going to be a little self-serving, so be ready for it. We make a living coming in to companies and transforming their culture into a training and development organization. Think about it. The only way anyone can reach their potential is through training and development. Maslow's hierarchy of needs simply says that we all have these needs, not wants, but needs. And business leader, hear me clearly. I don't care if it's three of you or 300. You got to understand the human spirit. I need to believe I can reach my potential with you. If I believe I can reach my potential with you, I stay. If I don't believe I can reach my potential with you, I leave. So what McDonald's did in high school, Steve, if you remember, we got threatened. If you don't raise your GPA, you're going to be somewhere flipping burgers.
Yeah.
So McDonald's knew that. They knew that. Yeah. Okay, give them to me. Give them to me. Give them to me. Give those kids to me. And Hamburger University was a leadership training that was literally designed to transform that kid who may not have been a great student, who might have struggled in school, wasn't focused, a little immature. McDonald's basically said, hey, man, you think you're coming to flip burgers? But give them to me, because you're really walking into a training and development organization masquerading as a burger joint. I get that. I understand that. Because as a basketball player, I was not highly recruited. I was moderately recruited. I couldn't go anywhere I wanted to go. But when I got to college, my college basketball coach, Clem Haskins, was basically running a training and development organization masquerading as the University of Minnesota basketball team. And every year at the end of the season, you sat down with him and you had a one-on-one conversation. And he gave you basically your performance review. And basically, man, if you want to play more next year, if you want to be more effective, you want more playing time, you got to do this, this, or that. Or the conversation was, look, son, if you want to play in the NBA, this is what you need to do. And the offseason was your chance to work on your game. And so we had this conversation with our coach every year, and there was accountability throughout the year with our assistant coaches, our physical therapists and trainers, our weight coach. We all had our own individual plan on what was going to help you reach your potential. I said it earlier, you cannot reach your potential without a coach. So think about it, Stephen. I went from being a college reserve sitting on the bench to an NBA starter. The only way that happened is that I had a great college coach who ran a training and development organization. And the only thing I did right was plug in. That's the only thing I did right was literally buy in and plug in, and the process and the system did the rest. So a lot of our clients are thrilled with the results they get with us, like Jersey Mike's and Microsoft and some of these big companies. And I'm like, look, dude, just trust the process. Don't trust me. Yeah, we created the process. We created iTeam. Yes, we created the swim, the book, and the Sacred Six. We created all that because I know what my life was like. I flunked out of my first high school, Stephen, and my dad had a process. He said, man, write your, that was my coach, right? He said, man, write your goals down, your life goals, and look at them every single day. That's all I want you to do. Look at them every single day, son. When you wake up in the morning, weigh yourself, get on scale, weigh yourself, and look at your goals every single day. Because if you keep your goals top of mind, it will guide your activity. And that was the system. And that got me to college, man. That simple system literally took me from being a 2.1 student to a 2.9 kid who got recruited across the country. That simple system. And he handed me off to my college coach who had a different system. His system was to help us graduate in 4 years. And if you're good enough, you're going to play in the NBA in my system. And after that, I got into Jerry Sloan's program at Utah, and he said something to me that changed my life. And it's the reason why we launched our speaking training and development company. He told me, if you want to make my team, Walter, you better listen, follow directions, and execute. In other words, that's all you got to do. Listen, follow directions, and execute. In other words, I'm going to teach you the Utah Jazz way. It's up to you to be coachable, and it's up to you to completely buy in.
Yeah, well, you're speaking my language. I think the leadership development programs are so key, and I think the businesses that do well have very sophisticated and well-run leadership training and personal development programs. I couldn't agree with you more. So let's just not look from the leader perspective, but I'm intrigued. Now, you played for three different NBA teams, I believe. So when you come in as a player to a team, maybe not necessarily the superstar coming in here, what did you bring to the team and how did you add value to that team?
Steven, that's a great question. And I'll tell you my struggles, because when you go from being a high school basketball star who used to be the center of attention, you get the ball when the game is on the line, and you go to college and you're just sitting on the bench, I mean, that's a wake-up call, man. That's like the sucker punch of all sucker punches. And my attitude wasn't right initially. I mean, I was kind of angry. I was bitter. I made excuses. And my father was like, look, man, you're at a new level, dude. High school's over, man. Everybody there at that level is good. Now, again, he's a ball player, right? So he understood that. And I didn't really recalibrate. I didn't understand that I needed to take my game to the next level. But my father said something to me. I want everybody to hear me clearly. Again, that was my first coach. And your mom and dad was your first coach. Your grandparents, whoever raised you, was your first coaches. He said, man, if you can help that man win, you're going to play. And I thought about it. I'm like, okay. He said, man, because we were losing at the time. We had a Big Ten losing streak. And my father's advice was simple. Again, he's making the handoff because I'm in college now. And his last couple of words were like, look, man, if you can help that man win, if you can help him win, you're going to play. And I noticed during the game, sitting on the bench, what we weren't doing, Stephen. And so when I got in the game, I became the solution, right?
Yeah.
And so if I work for a boss, I need to understand, what is this guy trying to accomplish? What is this lady trying to accomplish? And basically become the blessing, right? You become the difference maker. If it's uploading data into the software, do it. If it's smiling in the customer's face, do it. Is it good follow-up? You know, whatever your way is, whatever your methodology is, listen to the coach and go do it. And I got into the game and did the little things, man. You know, it's no different than freaking sweeping the floor, right?
Yeah.
You know, being a joy in the office, right? I took charges, man. I was like, look, I'm going to take a charge. I'm going to make the extra pass. I'm going to make sure we're running the offense. I'm going to make sure if any guy on that team is hot, I'm going to give him the ball. If another guy on the team is hot, let me guard him. I'm going to shut him down. So basically, my first focus wasn't even really my role. My first focus was helping us win. And as I helped us win, coach began to realize, like, we play better with this guy in the game. Right.
Yeah.
So my minutes increased. And before I knew it, I became the top six man in the country. Dick Vitale loved me. I carved out a niche. And so if I work for a company, I need to figure out what don't we do well here? Let me fix it. Right. What's our gap here? I got a leader who's doing and wearing a million different hats. Let me not be a burden. Right. Let me not be a headache. And let me come here and be a blessing. Let me be an impact player, regardless of your roles. You valet cars, you can be an impact player. You know, if you got a jersey, I learned myself. As long as we had one teammate named Connell Lewis. This kid never played. And coach told him, your job is to get our point guard ready in practice. And Connell Lewis struggled at first because he had his own dreams. But once he accepted his role, every day he knew his job was to make our starting point guard work. By Connell's senior year, he became the captain of the team. Because we all were like, we had so much respect for him. Because this kid knew he wasn't going to play. And we have a whole lot more practice than you do games. And his game became practice. And he did exactly what coach called him to do. Now he's a pastor of a church, living well, because he just did what the coach asked him to do. We won. And we all, to this day, respect him so much. Fans don't get it, though.
Yeah,
you know, we walk into an alumni event, they probably wouldn't even remember his name. But we all remember how important Connell Lewis was to our team and building. So sometimes you might not think you're important. Trust me, you are important if you got a jersey.
Well, you just described the perfect, perfect example of what a teammate and what a good employee or an executive team member should do, as opposed to, you know, what's best for me or what is my personal goal going to be. It's more, what can I do to contribute to help the team? Just a little side note here, a lot of people might not know this about me, but I actually played college basketball as well at a much smaller school in Minnesota. It was basically a Division III school, but I was basically the 11th man on a 12-man team. But one of the most honorable awards I ever received was my teammates voted me team captain my senior year. And as you say, I found a way to contribute. I was 11th man on a 12-man team, and I was voted team captain. So, yeah, those are the kind of things that
Gustavus Adolphus? What school was that?
It was Pacific Lutheran University in Tacoma, Washington. So now, in your coaching services, now you're working with leaders. What do you think is the most common challenge that you see them struggle with?
I mentioned it earlier. One is really having a way, right? What is your program about, right? And a lot of business leaders don't even understand that because they just want to hire people and just hire random people, and then they get all this turnover, and you can never build chemistry with high turnover. So the first thing a business leader needs to do is to create a way. Like, what is your system? And a lot of times it boils down to your core values. Less than 10% of our clients that we engage have core values, or their core values govern. And I made the analogy earlier, the difference between a winning team and a championship team are core values, right? You notice I didn't even mention losing teams. Losing teams are just chaotic, right? They just chaotic. They play hard, but they're completely chaotic. But when you're on a winning team, you have core values, right? And what typically happens, Stephen, and you know this as well as I do, that almost all the guys buy into the core values on a winning team. You got a few outliers. You got a few people who are a little bitter, don't like their role, might keep a little drama going in the locker room. But when you're on a championship team, you got no room for error. Everyone buys in. Everyone plays their role. Everyone is like completely committed. And so I challenge my clients, do you want a losing team, a winning team, or a championship team? We've had big companies come to us and say, Walter, we never even realized it. You're right. We're a winning team, but we're not champions.
Yeah.
We're not champions. And that's what we are. And that same person to go and watch the Cowboys or the Seahawks and criticize them. Boo, you guys blew the Super Bowl. Wait a minute. You're a CEO. Is your team winning a Super Bowl at work? Well, that's different. No, it's not. No, it is not.
Yeah.
Anyone who gets a paycheck is a professional in my mind. If you get paid every 2 weeks, you are a pro. So that same level of expectation you have on your favorite, we do it to college kids, right? We expect all this greatness out of college kids, and these kids don't even get paid. They get a little 10 by 10 cell called a dorm, and they get to eat for free. And they just add a name or two on the freaking school roster, right? And so fans expect these college kids to get better and improve and win championships with all this pressure when they're 18, 19, 20 years old, can't even drink legally yet. But then you go to work and let yourself off the hook. Well, you know, we're in a recession. Well, you know, it's there's a shortage on gas. So whatever your freaking excuse is, when I come and speak to my clients, there's no excuses. You know, I made it to the NBA even though I never started in college. I broke my foot twice, no excuses. My father would not let me make excuses, right? And so we all need to have a really good coach. And a great coach builds your confidence. They set expectations, but they don't let you off the hook. But they have a system, and they have confidence, man. If I can plug this kid into my system, I can produce them at the potential. And I'll give you another example, North Dakota State. Isn't that amazing what they've done? North Dakota State, this is a football team in the middle of nowhere, right? And they're recruiting kids that everybody else has picked over. And basically saying, look, you come to me, we're going to coach you into being the number one three pick in the draft. We're going to coach you to be Carson Wentz, I think, was the number one pick in the draft. And this new kid just came out. A school in the middle of nowhere, Fargo, North Dakota. So obviously they coach well. And obviously they have some kind of system. And that's the only way you can reach your potential. So a great business leader, you're going to not only have core values, you want to make sure your core values govern your organization. But most important, you understand the next thing you got to do is build a championship team. And a lot of times leaders are so self-centered. And that's the first thing I notice when I would go to these leadership workshops, you know, executive presence, you know, own the room. After a while, I'm like, man, that's about the leader. That had nothing to do with the team, right? And to me, teamwork is about us. Leadership is about you. So I've had clients that say, hey, I want you to come and do a leadership training. I say, great, it's called iTeam. Well, I want you to do a leadership training. We are doing a leadership training. And once I explain it to them, they're like, oh, my God, like I never thought of it that way. We're going to teach your leaders how to build a team. And let me tell you what's most important, Steve. Here's my secret. You got to really focus on the midsection. And that's what McDonald's did. They focus on the manager. Think about the human body, right? You got to have a head and a brain. You got to have a heart, but every other vital organ is located in the midsection, right?
Yeah.
Where's your reproductive system? In the midsection, right? If you have a bad back, can you go to work? No. Can you golf? No. I mean, if you think about everything that can go wrong in the midsection, business leaders, you need to understand that you need to invest in your middle managers. I've shared this with PayPal. I've shared this with Honda. I've shared this with, and people are like, dude, this is brilliant. Like, we never even, every great trainer, and I'm speaking your people's language right now, whether it was a lifting day, you did upper body one day, you did lower body the next day, but you always did core work.
Yeah.
Because any trainer, a physical therapist that understands anything about the body, you got to focus on the core. The core is like the foundation of the body. And so the analogy I want to give people, because in my basketball career, we always did core work. And I hated it, right? I hated doing core work. Yeah. But once that six-pack started popping out, all of a sudden you want to take your shirt off, right?
Yeah,
although
yeah.
You hated core work. And companies neglect their middle managers. And it's amazing that they do that because they just don't know what they don't know. And I thank God for it because it allows our training and development company to flourish because we built all the processes. We built all the systems. So I'm like, look, you guys don't have to build a process or a system. You can just basically lease ours.
Yeah, you make a really great point. It's, you know, so many people just focus on the top echelon of leaders and trying to make them better. But really those leadership development programs and personal development programs throughout the entire organization is what really makes the difference. I would agree.
That's right. Top to bottom, man. You gotta win. Your team has got to be tight top to bottom.
Yeah, for sure. Well, Walter, usually at this point in the interview, I always ask a common question. And that question is, in relation to leadership, what is a pearl of wisdom that you could leave our listeners with today?
I'm going to be redundant. I mean, you have to transform your company into a training and development organization. And that's why the book Swim that I wrote has been so successful. Mark Victor Hansen from Chicken Soup for Your Soul mentored me on the book. He heard me speak in front of 3,000 realtors when I was just talking about the shark, the suckerfish, and the parasites. And if you really think about it, Stephen, those are the kind of three people on this earth: sharks, suckerfish, and parasites. Sharks represent successful people, right? Suckerfish represents someone who has potential, but they need a little bit of coaching. They got to be connected to the right person. A parasite is that person who comes to work every 2 weeks, takes the check, and can care less about your company. In fact, they can care less about you. And so in the book Swim, we really teach it through a parable. A guy named Drew goes out and recruits misfits. He goes out and recruits alcoholics. He goes out and recruits people. Even their dog they got at a freaking dog pound, right?
Yeah.
But his whole strategy was, I want to take broken people and I want to fix and repair them. And I want to transform them into something spectacular. And the way he did it, every day he trained them on the Sacred Six. For example, here's one of them. Sharks never stop moving forward or they die. Think about that. Sharks never stop moving. They outwork every other fish, right? And so a lot of your C students, right, you can outwork people and still win, right? But most C students are uneven with their efforts, right? And so the first thing I learned in my life as a C student, I had to work hard. When I flunked out my first high school, I wasn't working hard. When I was sitting on the bench, I wasn't working hard. So my first coach taught me work ethic. Sharks never stop moving forward or they die. Two, sharks only look up, they never look down. Which means sharks are positive and they don't deal with anything petty. And so imagine if your culture was positive, right? It's got to come from the leader, right? And we map it out in the book Swim. But the third one is sharks are curious and always learning. And that's where training and development comes in. You will never meet an employee that says, you know what, I left my company because they had amazing training and development. You'll never say that. Why? Because when you train and develop people, especially that C student, they appreciate it. People love to learn, okay? And I don't have enough time to go through all six. That's why you got to buy the book Swim. But I'm going to teach you the last one, which is amazing. And this is what people love. Sharks are made of cartilage, which means they know when to pivot. They know when to change. They know when to shift. The reason why the sharks run the ocean, I'm going to give you three of the six. They outwork every other fish in the ocean. They only look up. They never look down. And they're flexible. When we got quarantined and got locked down, the CEO of Jersey Mike's, Peter Cancro, called me because he had just booked me to do like 25 messages just for his managers, just for his midsection, his core. And he learned the Sacred Six and he bought everybody one of my books. And they're killing it, by the way. If you pay attention, Subway better be nervous. They are killing the game right now. I won't take all the credit, just some of it. He says, Walter, you're right, man. We got to pivot. Like, this is coronavirus. And he told me what he was going to do to pivot. And while everybody else was struggling to stay open, Jersey Mike started giving money away. They gave Feeding America like $2 million. They just opened up 200 new stores. They are killing the game through the pandemic. Why? Because everyone got trained on the shark mindset. And they understood that happened like in December, January, and the coronavirus hit in March. He is so thankful that he invested in training and development. So when the coronavirus hit, his entire system was on the same page. His entire system was aligned. He had no apathy. Everyone was motivated, and everyone knew the sacred six. We can't stop moving or we die. We got to look up. We can't look down. We got to be curious and always learning, but we got to be flexible. So when he came out with the new program to survive COVID, nobody resisted. People hate change. Think about it. Change is what people hate. But since they have been conditioned and trained that sharks pivot, he spoke the language to them. Hey, guys, we got to pivot. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to give our coupons. We're going to improve our takeout. We're going to do more catering. And everyone worked with them, and their culture is completely unified. And that's why you invest in training and development.
That's a great, great example, great story. Thanks for sharing that. How do people find your book, and how do people find more out about you? How can they access that?
Easy. You know, the best way to find me is on our website, walterbond.com, just like 007, walterbond.com. If you want to swim, it's just walterbond.com/swim. They can take you right to a couple of different vendors where you can buy books in bulk. And I'm telling you, what most of my clients do, they book me to come in and do a message. They buy everybody a book, and everyone understands the shark mindset, and then they want more. They're like, man, can you come to a book club with us? Because everybody loves the book. And typically, we go right into our teamwork methodology. And honestly, if you want to transform a culture from something that's like a winning culture into a championship culture, I recommend buy everybody your book. Even if you can't afford me as a speaker, buy everybody Swim. And have us do our teamwork methodology. And in 2 years, I went from a 2.1 to a 2.9. You have no idea what could happen to your culture in 24 months, right? You can go from a winner to a champion in 24 months. We got a casino in Oklahoma we work with, and we've only been there 4 months. And they're already like, oh, my God, we already see the transformation. This is incredible. We got a bank in Maryland. My wife is doing this coaching and training. It's not even me because we're building bigger capacity. They're like, dude, like, I filled in for my wife one day, and they were like, no, we love you, Walter, but where's Antoinette? Because, you know, your coach becomes personal, right? Just like a yoga instructor, or I get that. Like, look, I'm an award-winning Hall of Fame motivational speaker. My wife and our other coaches are amazing coaches. I just help build the processes. I just help build the systems because I understand peak performance. And I had great coaches in my life, right? And so to me, man, this is like taking candy from a baby. And I love to coach the coaches, okay? And that's what we need more of. We need better coaches. And here's my final comment, and I don't want to run over time. Most leaders forget to be coaches, right? Your productivity as a leader will increase by 21% if you develop a coaching mentality as you lead. And most leaders who don't have a coaching mentality become fruit inspectors. You know what a fruit inspector does? They see that C student and they whack them. Yeah. And they be whacking me. Someone full of potential, but since you didn't know how to coach me, you come in and whack me with your machete. I'm coming to make a citizen's arrest. Put down that machete because your C student is your largest demographic. And I tell my leaders, I flunked out of my first high school. You would have taken your machete and whacked me. I sat on the bench my freshman year. You would have taken out your machete and whacked me. But thank God I was around coaches who basically said, give them to me. Tom Brady was a 6th-round pick. Bill Belichick said, give them to me. Russell Wilson was a 3rd-round pick. Hey, give them to me.
Yeah.
Give them to me. That's what coaches do. Give them to me.
Such a great example. Well, Walter, this has been just an extreme pleasure. Your passion and your positivity and your vibe is just infectious. And it's just been a real pleasure talking with you today. I really appreciate it. And wish you all the best of luck going forward. And I'm sure there's great things in your future.
Awesome. Thank you, Steve. And God bless you, man. And let's do it again.
All right. Sounds good. Take care.
Awesome. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Profiles in Leadership. To listen to all my interviews, subscribe to Profiles in Leadership with Steve Anderson on Apple Podcasts, iTunes, and many other popular podcast platforms. Some of these interviews are on video, and you can search YouTube for Profiles in Leadership with Steve Anderson. You can also access the entire library of interviews on my website, orange.coaching.com, and that is orange.coaching.com, and go to the Media Center and click on Podcasts or Video Gallery. You can also enter the website from pilpodcast.com.